Hello, this is Susie at Scarlett Leadership Institute. Thank you for joining us on our monthly Lunch and Leadership call today. Everyone's phones are muted at the moment, but you can press star 7 at any time to ask a question. And at the end of the discussion, we will also have a Q&A. And again, you can press star 7. If you're joining us online, you can submit a question by the computer at any time, and we will address that. And again, for those joining us online, if you cannot see the slides, there's a button at the bottom to synchronize slides with phone or with webcast. And with that, I turn it over to Joe Scarlett.
Good afternoon, everybody, and welcome to another one of our leadership conference calls. A word about our business first. Our next Emerging Leaders program starts on April 10th. That's an eight-day class spread over 8 months, teaching basic leadership skills to those who are first-time managers in a serious way. So we're looking forward to that. We already have a class a little more than half full, so check us out online and sign up for the class if that fits your needs. Our last conference call was on presentation skills, and after we finished the call, we announced a one-day presentation skills class, and we've been very pleasantly surprised to find that the class we announced is already full. It's a one-day class for $375 with a lot of individual coaching on public speaking and making presentations, and we're happy to announce that as of today, there will now be a second class, which is scheduled for March 19th. So if you all are interested in signing up for presentation skills, the next class will be March 19th. Our next call, by the way, will be on March 14th. Mark your calendars. Topic to be announced a little bit later on. Today's topic is on managing change, and we're thrilled to have Lynn Maynor with us, who's a real pro in that area. She has been teaching change management for a long time, including at all of our executive classes. Just an initial comment, we're living in a changing world. Change is coming at us faster. I think technology is probably enhancing that more than anything, but in a global economy, we're continually facing changes of one sort or another in virtually every aspect of our business. And as I like to say in our classes and when I was a tractor supply company, it's up to all of us in leadership roles to try to encourage change, to be change agents, to be supportive, to get engaged and to get involved in helping change move the organization, whatever your organization is or your department or your company, move it forward, because change is a way of being competitive and staying ahead of the game. Reminder now, questions, send them in over the web if you can, and be prepared for, we'll talk for about 40 minutes and then open it up for discussion, so get your questions ready. One additional note there, for those of you who may have joined us later, if you're having trouble looking at the slides online, but down to the bottom, there's a little word there that says synchronize, either synchronize with phone or synchronize with the web. So just click that on and you'll get the slides. So with that, let's turn it over to our hostess, Mary Fink. Mary?
Thanks, Joe. And I'd like to take a minute to say a little more about Lynn. Lynn has been teaching with us since we really started the Scarlett Leadership Institute, teaching change. And I met Lynn years before that, and she introduced me to this change material, which I think has been so successful for us and so meaningful. So, Lynn, would you like to say a few things about yourself?
Delighted, Mary. Can you all hear me?
Yes.
Yeah.
Okay, great. Yes, delighted to be a part of this phone call today, and change is one of my favorite topics. I work at Gaylord Entertainment Company, which is formerly now a part of the Marriott program, and been teaching change here for good 15, 18 years, certainly live change and experience it. So I'm still in the process, and I love teaching the process as well. I also have 15 years with continuous improvement at Gaylord. So, and of course, continuous improvement always leads to change. So this was one of the greatest areas of improvement for us to get people to engage in change and embrace it. So much experience in that area, and delighted to be asked to speak on this phone call today.
Thank you. The foundation of the material that we work with says that personal change precedes organizational change. And I always say that to classes the very first thing if I'm teaching the class, because I think it's important to know that it's okay for me to feel like I have to get my head around it before I can help others move through the change. Lynn, what do you think about that?
Absolutely, because the organization is made up of a group of individuals, and we all have to go through that change process. And it's a different experience for all of us. Until we deal with it, it's hard for the organization to go forward as well. So it's deeply personal and very much a community process as well.
I know we talk about some of the activities that we can do when we first hear of the change to make it a little more acceptable, to be a little more at ease with it. And one of those things is to clearly define what the change is and what it isn't. And I know in my own experience, moving to a new space, moving a lot of people to a new space is one of the most disruptive changes that we can have. And I know when we moved the hospital, Williamson Medical Center, from one site to another, I grossly underestimated the impact that was going to have on 750 people coming to a new place at the very same time. So I know, tell us a little bit about what we might do to identify what the change is and how important it is, especially to identify what the change is not.
Yeah, you know, people, we like to have a sense of control. We like control. It keeps us stable. And when somebody comes in and changes or disrupts that, it's disruptive to the whole body experience. And so people need to know what is the change? What can we define the change as? What is that vision a little bit? But being able to define what it is and what it isn't. And most people, when they first experience that change that comes into their life, it's, you know, a lot of people like to say, what's in it for me? That's really not the question at the front end of the change experience. It's more about, what does this mean for me? And I'm trying to, we're meaning-seeking people. So we need to try to put it back into a box of security. And so I'm trying to get, what shape is it? What size is it? So we need to be able to help people to know what it is and what it is not. And then help people define what it is that you want out of this. So putting
right.
ourselves back in a place of some security and safety, but still owning that process as well.
Yes, there's great security in knowing that some things are going to stay the same and we can count on that. So I think we have to focus on that as well. It also helps to know a little bit about what the change is going to look like. And how can we do that if we don't really know? I mean, how can I get my head around something that I don't really know what it's going to look like?
I think that as far as management being able to start to think about that stop, start, continue thing, what do we think is stopping? What do we know is stopping? What do we think is staying the same? And being open to that a little bit, but helping managers to put some clarity to that. But the other end for me as a person going through that is, you know, looking at my experiences and knowing what I have to offer this process as well, and being clarity about who I am a little bit to help define that change. I may not be able to know what that vision is or look in that crystal ball, but I do have a warehouse of experiences of that when I found myself here in the past, what did I do? So that helps me to put some security and ownership around defining what it is that I need right now.
Right, because we don't always know. And I'll put you on the spot a little, and I know that in 2010, the flood situation out there at the hotel was just horrible, and much change that you went through, that you led other people through. Tell us a little bit about how you got your head around that, because it wasn't something that was planned. It wasn't something that anyone knew about ahead of time.
No, obviously, you know, you wake up and the next day your hotel's closed, and trying to understand what all of that means. But first and foremost was helping people to recognize the human need. A sense of, will I have a job? Will I be able to continue to work in that process? So we knew that we immediately needed to answer the basic human needs. And we didn't have all that information because we didn't know how long until we could get in the hotel, how long the hotel would be closed in that process. But to continue to work on human needs, what is it that you're, what questions do you have? How can we provide information in a more timely way? How can I be there for you even when I don't have answers in the process? But being there for people at the front end and helping to understand the questions that are on their minds that sometimes are different from top leaders' minds and so forth. So, and then giving people a place just to be human again with each other and vent their frustrations and then of course we had a common cause to get that hotel open as fast as possible. So that rallied people in that process. But for folks that were not working, we needed to stay in high touch and high communication with them to make sure they felt that they were part of this process when we didn't have a job. and keeping the lines of human resource lines open. And we made sure that we were manning those human resource lines, not other folks, so that they knew when they talked, oh, it's Lynn or it's Mary, and they know who we are. And that brought great security and stability and trust in that factor.
That's great. And that leads us to the next point, and that is how important, how critical communication is in times of change. In different stages, communication needs change, but it is so critical that leaders and managers stay in touch during those times so that everyone does know whatever there is to know about it.
Yeah, absolutely. I always say to leaders and kind of coaching this skill set, if you think you've said it, say it again and say it again. Because in the early parts of the change process, we lock on to things, and as soon as we lock on to something, we don't hear the rest of the story. We don't hear everything that leaders oftentimes think they were clearly communicating. So I always say it again and say it again. And say it again without being stressed or frustrated by that. It's foreign language to folks when change comes in, and they just don't understand it at first. And we hear parts and pieces of it, but even though you said the whole to them or said everything you knew, they just didn't hear it all, even though you said it. So be patient with that process, but say it again and say it again. And say it in ways that you're facilitating some questions, too, out of that. What else do you need from me? What questions do you have that I may not have answered? So give them a chance to get involved in that dialogue, to let them have a chance to tell you something that maybe you just assume they know, but you can't assume here.
Right. And the other piece of communication that's so important during that time is the listening piece as well. It's not only telling people what we know, but hearing from them what their concerns and worries are.
Yeah, absolutely. Because, again, back to that, you know, personal change precedes organizational change, and the change is different for everybody. We don't exactly feel the same way or think the same way, so we need to tap into people, listen to them from an emotional place, listen to them from a fact place, listen to them from their questioning, and deduct where that is for them. And they give that away in that process, so we can understand this person's maybe fear is more a concern for them, or this person is more about what this means for them as far as a job or things like that. So when we listen, we need to listen from the head and the heart.
Absolutely. Joe, as a leader of a major organization, I know that there were lots of changes that happened at Tractor, and I know one of the things that we talk about is leaders being more visible, not less, during times of change. How did you manage that?
Well, this whole communications piece is very, very important. You can't emphasize that enough. And repeat, repeat, and repeat. And as I like to say, it's our job as leaders to beat the grapevine. You know, if the grapevine's there ahead of you, we're not doing a good job communicating. And you're talking about being visible and being there. One of the worst decisions I ever made was allowing our company to flip the switch to change our computer systems overnight one night. And that was just, it put us into a paralysis and a position of somewhat, you know, some chaos and paralysis, and we weren't able to replenish the stores, and things were just a mess. But that's when we in the leadership team were most visible. We were there. We were helping. We were listening. We were paying attention. We were communicating. And it was interesting because we were so engaged, not a single a systems or technology person left the company during the entire probably 6 months it took us to completely dig out of that mess. So good communication, clear communication, and leadership engagement is essential in trying to make in making any change work effectively.
And visibility brought probably tremendous trust.
I'm sure that's the case.
One of the things that happens to people is they go into a mindset of a victim. This happened to me. I have to do this because someone's making me do this. Or, you know what, it always happens to myself or my department or my company, and I get myself into this endless victim mentality. How does that hurt us, and how can we avoid it?
Well, victim is usually one of two choices. Either you're a victim or you're not, and it's easy to get caught up in that emotional turmoil that's going on inside of us, and either we want to beat ourselves up or we want to get angry at somebody or something else, and so that can spiral into that place. And really, successful change organizations and successful change people work very hard at not becoming the victim. And that's really one of the key skill sets behind change management, is to not allow yourself to become a victim. I think if you liken that to the seven habits of highly effective people, habit one is to take responsibility. And if you take that word responsibility, it's the ability to respond. And when people have the ability to respond, they begin to take ownership. So that's real critical early on to get people to realize, I didn't ask for this maybe, and I wouldn't want it, but I am here, and I have some responsibility to take responsibility for my life and for my team, and taking, or you know, putting that puts us in a place of empowerment then versus stewing.
Exactly. And the stewing can be in the way of that internal tape that runs inside our head all the time. We can be talking ourselves into a position of or a mindset of being a victim. And we could also talk ourselves out of it. Language is so important, whether we're hearing it internally or whether we're hearing it from the outside, that we need to make sure we're doing everything we can, am I not right, to make sure that that's a positive message and not a negative one.
Correct, because, you know, all feelings are valid, but not all behavior is. And so we have to watch the language set by which we speak. And if we are attentive to that or even consciously aware to that, then we can catch ourselves using words of empowerment or words of victim. And then
right.
It takes us back, if we're, you know, in a place of victim again, we won't take responsibility. We want to blame others or circumstances. We're in a place of watching empowering words versus I can do something about this. I may not like where I'm at right now, but I can do something about this. I have a choice in this process.
Right. Talk to me a little bit about the learning curve. I know we talk in terms of it often doesn't go well when we make the decision and just throw it out there and people don't have the response that we think they're going to have. They don't accept it with open arms because they haven't gotten used to it. But what can you say about helping us to respect the learning curve, to give people a chance to get to where we are in our thinking so that they can accept the decision?
Yeah, you know, the organization at the higher up where the decision-making is being discussed and the change has been bantered around and analyzed and all of that, there are a lot of the organization wasn't a part of that. So they don't have the ability to know have any understanding around that. So, but once we give them that, it's like any learning thing. It just takes a while before we get that learning curve up. Right now at Gaylord, we're going through a lot of change, having become part of the Marriott family, and we're switching over to their systems. Well, we're back at the ABC level of trying to just comprehend that. So we're going to lose eye contact with our guests right now while we're mechanically trying to learn, get the learning curve up. And we need to be patient with that as leaders to recognize that our employees are doing the best they can because they're not at the top level of the learning curve yet. So therefore, there's an outcome of that. And some of that is our guest satisfaction might slip for a while. And we need to be patient with that but encourage that. Nothing
right.
comes easy necessarily in a 1-2-3 step. Leaders need to have a little faith and some sense of humor and some support why the process of change is going on in
and
that.
Some patience.
So, you know, just like in kindergarten when we put the little seed in the cup, change is coming if we do the right things in the environment, but we don't want to tamper with that area why that learning curve is going on because it will only frustrate the folks that are going through that change because then it makes me feel like I'm not doing what you need me to do and now I'm going to go beat myself up again because it seems harder. So if we can give some faith in that process, some space to that, and encouragement, that'll help that learning curve and recognize that we aren't going to be fully productive in that change process at that point in the process.
We have a question from one of our online listeners, and that is, what are some examples of victim words? What are some things that we might listen for to know that someone's in that place?
A good bit of that is like words, I can't, I won't, you know, versus, you know, I don't understand this, but I'm willing to open myself up to learn. So constantly taking ownership for the choice in words. So when you look at that change process, you want words that are not negative, but more positive. This is hard, but I can learn in this process, or I have thoughts to add to this. So we want to find words that allow us to take action versus words that can't, won't, blaming types of things.
Right. I know that one of the exercises that we sometimes do with classes is to talk about what are the words that come to mind when you think of a victim versus what are the words that come to mind when you think pioneer. And it's a whole different way of thinking about things. Pioneers often met, the literal pioneers often met amazing challenges, but there was a curiosity about them and, as you said, a faith and a patience about them to find out what was coming or what was going to be around the next curve. So I think sometimes we just need to think in terms of possibilities rather than this is all happening to me and I have no choice.
Correct. If we could look to our youth, particularly children, because children are extremely open to possibility. Even if they don't understand what you're telling them, they are just naturally curious. And if we would tap back into that inner skill of ourselves that we grew up with, which is to be curious, to seek openness, to look at potential or possibility, versus just kind of closing ourselves off a little bit and becoming defensive in that process.
Exactly. So as we go back to the learning curve, and one of the bullets I think that we have up on the screen is to seek out the information you need yourself. It's not always going to come to you, and I remember as a leader myself, I always got suggestions that we need more information, we need more communication, and it seemed at the time that that was all I was doing. But I think we also have a responsibility as individuals in the organization to seek out that information that you need from the person that you think can give it to you. And in all the great organizations, that will happen. That whoever has that information is usually glad to share. Joe, do you want to speak to that?
The biggest change that Tractor Supply ever underwent was transforming itself from selling to farmers, people involved in agriculture for a living, to selling to hobby farmers. And that was a change for us that took place on an evolutionary basis as opposed to a revolutionary basis. And some of our old-timers would push back at us and say, hey, that we're not doing the right thing, we're going the wrong way. But we would explain to them that, you know, look at the sales numbers, look at how many of this we're selling versus how many of that we're selling. And it was very clear that everything that had to do with hobby farmers was on a growth path, and the products that had to do with production agriculture were either flat or declining. And so it was an evolutionary change over many years, but there was a lot of discussion there. And when you make a change like that, that affected everything about our company. It affected where we put stores, what hours we're open, who we hired, what products we carried, how we advertised. So it was a massive change that took place over several years. But it was, we kept explaining and kept talking about and kept demonstrating about from the numbers about how this really works. And virtually everybody flipped over onto our side of the ledger over a period of a couple of years, and obviously worked out very well.
And I know, because I know you, having worked with you for a while, that you're constantly encouraging people to ask me what you don't know, ask me for information you don't have. And I've heard you say it 100 times, no topic is off limits.
That's exactly right. And we'd be in the stores, and I'd run up to some crusty old guy who'd been running a store for 10 years, and he grew up on a farm, and he's still driving a tractor on when he goes home after work. And he'd say, Joe, you know, we need more of this old, you know, some repair product for the tractors. And I just put my arm around him and I'd say, listen, Charlie, you know, let's look at what we're really selling here. Pull out your reports and we'd go through it. And most cases they'd say, oh yeah, that's right. And they would roll around to the right kind of change. But it takes a lot of listening and a lot of conversation. And when you got the facts on your side, it's also great to just show off those facts about why this change really works. And in any change process, the earlier you can demonstrate success, the more people buy into the process. So whatever success you have in the change, get it out there and tell people about it early on.
Absolutely.
And, Joe, those would be even small successes, because they don't come in huge quantities at the front end, but small successes is really important. You know, so, yeah, the saying goes, in God we trust, but everybody else must bring facts. And bringing facts and short wins helps people to see evidence that we are making progress.
You're exactly right. I want to talk a little bit now about leadership and about, you know, leading a group through the change as opposed to me getting my head around it or perhaps working through it with a group. And I know that leadership change is different on the front end of a major change, or leadership in the change is a little different on the front end as it is on the than it is on the back. And on the front end, we talked about the visibility, the communication, the patience, the emotional support. But there's another piece to that that on the managing task side that says a lot of times so much emotional energy is going into thinking about the change, planning for the change, worrying about the change, that it's really hard for me to keep my mind or to keep my eye on the ball, as we say, and get the work as usual done. Can you speak to that a little bit?
Of course. You know, change is like a coin, heads and tails, and, you know, the Chinese word for change is Wei Qi, and it's made up of the two characters of crisis and opportunity. And leaders do need to speak on the front end of that change a little bit more in that crisis management piece, which is addressing the human side, because change is going to come into us. We're going to experience it as a human first. And then once we start to go with that change, we'll start to talk more business now on the business side of things, the opportunity. So on that first side, you are having to be much more human in that process of appreciating feelings and appreciating thoughts, and that we're going to have to give that high encouragement, high touch in that process, and bear with that people, you know, it's like the pedal on the bike. There's two pedals, and, you know, we got to get both sides moving, the process and people. And people need to be talked to in human ways, authentic ways, genuine ways, so that that's how we tell our stories and connect to each other and can appreciate, like, the stories that Joe's telling, that we've been there, we've seen that, and that humanizes a little bit. And it also validates us as human beings. And when we can get that moving, it gets the human power moving faster versus it derailing us because we're not dealing emotionally or using our emotions in an intelligent way. So leaders do have to spend a little bit more time on that human side and tapping into how people are thinking and feeling and giving them the opportunity to ask questions and face that a little bit.
And then as we begin to become aware that people are a little more accepting or maybe even just a little more curious, a little less resistant, if you will, we can back off a little from the human side and get on with the technical side of it. Would you not agree?
Absolutely, and that's where you want to be, because as leaders, we're driving results and, you know, have to increase our profits and keep morale up, and that's where we really want to be. But we recognize that there's a tunnel that precedes that, and that's that human side. But once we get, you know, very proficient at that and we get our learning curve up on that process of change management, change leaders, then we can get to the other side a whole lot quicker. You know, and it smooths out. People are ready to talk about the benefits and the vision, and they begin to put contribution to that. So I always want to get there quicker. I'd rather have the fast lane to that, but the fast lane is to be a little bit slow on the front end with dealing with people and getting that, because then it's more genuine. It's not disingenuous. It's more genuine in that process. And as in the book Good to Great with Jim Collins, you know, the leaders definitely have to be able to have, you know, faith, retain faith that this, we will get through this, but also confront the brutal facts. And so we're confronting the brutal facts on the front end that change is going to be a little bit different with people. And on the back end, you know, we're going to have that prevailing hope that this is all going to come together. So confront brutal facts and have prevailing hope. We always have to have that as a leader in front of us.
Exactly. Joe?
I'll tell you a story about massive change at Tractor Supply. Other than this, the change of a focus on the customer, we made one large acquisition, and it could have been very disruptive to the company, but we took a sort of a programmed approach to it, saying that we had to take care of the existing 300 stores, but here come 100 new stores. And the way we did that is we ran our business Monday through Friday on a normal basis, and then every Monday night at 5 o'clock or so, we'd take the top 15 leaders in the company, and we'd lock ourselves in a room together and bring in a bunch of pizzas and figure out, you know, what do we need to do to integrate these 100 stores? And we'd work till, you know, the wee hours of the morning, and we were in there, and we were working together as a team. And over time, we were able to put together plans to integrate this 100 stores into the company and integrate them fairly quickly in a very programmed way without interrupting the regular business, because that could have been very, very disruptive to us. One of the things that we did to really help the process is once we got the mechanical things going, myself and Jim Wright, the president, Stan Ruder, who ran store operations, each one of the three of us went out and spent a full day or close to a full day in every single store before it reopened for business. We closed them down and reopened them. And we talked to the employees in those stores for hours on end in big groups and small groups, so that by the time that store opened, they had spent hours talking to and listening to one senior executive and learn all about the company. So by the time they opened, although they had worked for another company sometimes for many, many years, they wound up working for us, and they understood our values and our systems and our processes and our beliefs before the door ever opened. And as a result, we had those folks have had longevity with us. They've been loyal employees. They've been wonderful people because we spent the time to integrate them culturally into the company.
And took the time to understand from their perspective, not just what was happening at Tractor, but what must have been happening there.
They had been, if I can get off on a side note here, they since their company had been actually in bankruptcy, they were a truck would show up at the door and they'd get half the products they wanted, and they really began to believe in us once the truck showed up on the first replenishment and there was 95% or 98% of what they expected to get. All of a sudden they became real believers in the new management.
That's great. We have two questions from our listeners, and one, Joe, I'm going to pitch to you, and that is, how do you persuade your boss to accept change? How did people persuade you to accept change?
They persuaded me to accept change by facts, by convincing, by talking, by conversation, by open conversation, and by the engagement of as many people as would make sense. Anytime putting together change, the more involvement you have from the more people, the more likely you are to have something work. The more likely you are to make a good decision. So it's about listening. It's about paying attention. It's about having a focus. In our organization, our focus was on continuous improvement. We believe that everything is subject to change and change for improvement's sake. So we're always on this path of improvement. One of our values in the company was change, consistent change. Embrace it, accept it. I can't remember the exact words that went with it, but we were very, very focused on change as a way of continually improving our organization, because if you're not changing, the competition is, and they're going to catch up with you or surpass you.
Thank you. And the next question for either of you is there a fundamental difference between change management and change leadership?
That's a good question. Change leadership, there's definitely things leaders have to do to lead the change process. And then there's technical pieces of managing that process. So I think it's all part of the same package again. So with leadership, again, there needs to be that prevailing hope that and ability to see possibilities and that openness to change and keep people in a very curious learning environment. And I think that's leadership, tapping individuals and keeping them growing and mentoring, because the more you grow and mentor others, you're keeping them in a place of exercising that muscle of curiosity and growth and learning and being comfortable in an uncomfortable place. And we get that because the more we fly that plane of change management or going through change, the more we exercise that leadership. The managing of the change process requires some technical pieces as well. You know, you have a good process and a good system to create change, you know, through continuous improvement, techniques and things to get innovation in place, and to have meetings and to manage those meetings. So managing that process is important as much as leading it. But leaders have the responsibility to continuously create an organization that is wanting and needing to grow. And that's a leadership skill in my mind.
Right. You're creating the environment that supports it.
And when you
but there definitely needs to be, as I'm sure Joe could talk about it in his organizations, you know, there needs to be good discipline practices in place where we are looking to innovate and brainstorming and learning how to manage people in a process. So there's some definite management pieces in that as well.
When you personally are leading the change, you will grow dramatically out of the process, because you're going to make a lot of mistakes along the way. You're going to have to back up and restart and back up and restart and learn and listen and so on. But you will become a much better leader as a result of managing a change process. And the next time you manage the change, you'll do that much better a job.
Absolutely. The last bullet in the slides that we have is talking about the challenges that leaders face And we've got several mentioned here, and I'll just let you speak to any that you want. The lack of support of the change, you know, you make the announcement, and 50% of your work staff digs their heels in and says, I'm not going there. Now, we all feel that way at some point, but if it's a prevailing feeling that lasts over a period of time, then it does need some management. Joe, do you have a...
I have a story about that. In 1981, the president who hired me at Tractor Supply Company got fired. I was one of half a dozen vice presidents, and the group of us and vice presidents really liked the fellow who was the president, even though I didn't know what he was doing. But he was fired and no longer there, and there was a new fella on board. And my peers tended to resent this new fella, and they tended to sort of back off and stay away. And I figured that I had nothing to lose by helping him, so I worked with him. He was a good business guy. I knew retailing, and we partnered together, and I helped him learn about retailing. He helped me mature as a business person. And lo and behold, 3 or 4 months later, when he became the permanent president of the company, he made me the number two person in the company. So that we were going through enormous change, and I supported him when my peers, they didn't necessarily not support him, but they weren't at all enthusiastic, or they did not partner with him the way I did. So always support your boss, particularly during change.
Right. The another one is that change becomes the focus of the organization, and I've been in organizations myself where this happened. The change takes on a life of its own, and much of our energy and our effort and our emotional energy go into thinking about the change or working on the change, and business as usual sort of falls to the wayside. How can we keep that from happening? Lynn, you want to take that one?
Yeah, I mean, it's typical in that first early stages that it's predictable that productivity will be down and the change tends to be the topic and it just absorbs us. But as leaders, we want to make sure that we're working productively. And to do that is to, again, give a little bit of permission for that emotional intelligence stuff to be worked on. But we need to help them focus on understanding what that change is and getting the information that we need. So I clearly want to start getting people what they need to understand this change. Do I need to show them an article? Do I need to get them a benchmark? Do I need to show them an area where it looks like showing them those evidences? But it is typical for productivity to go down, and the best way to get productivity back up is to make it safe for people to be validated that we're not going to be in a place of producing everything the way we want to. But I give people permission. When I've been dealing with that at Gaylord, I would give people permission to talk about some of that, and then I'm going to focus us on something we're going to be productive on in that process so that I'm emotionally allowing that to take place through brainstorming or flip charts. What are your thinking? What are your thoughts? Where are we today? Great. Now I'm going to move us back to something productive again so that we're keeping the business moving in that process.
Right.
I got to remind them of that as well because it's easy to get to drowned in that.
Absolutely.
One thought when you're going through, when you're leading change is to coach your people who are going to have to be working extra hours, which is typically the case. That's a good time to encourage them to go back to their families and say, hey, you know, we're going through this for the next 6 or 8 weeks. Be understanding because I'm going to have to work more hours than usual. But then, you know, family will go away for a long weekend come June when the process is all behind us. And you know, getting family support in tough times can be very important to people's, you know, sense of commitment to what they're doing. So we always, you know, when we were getting into a big work time, we'd counsel and coach our people to, you know, chat with your family, let them know that this is the peak time of the year. In Tractor Supply stores, the peak time of the year is April and May, and we coach our store managers to tell their families, you know, I'm going to be working extra hours then, but, you know, come June or July, you know, we're going to go away for a long weekend or a long vacation or whatever and make it up to you. So get the family commitment is important in getting people's commitment to push the change and make it work for you.
Right. And then you mentioned the validation of the emotions and that every emotion is valid. I think it's really important for leaders to remember that everybody's, as you said before, everybody responds a little bit differently and has a little bit of a different worry or concern or fear, and it's okay to be able to express that. In fact, it's important, and it's a good thing to express that, to give people a place where they can say what they need to say, and I think that's one way to deal with the high level of emotional energy among the staff is that there are times when we come together and just hear what anybody wants to say, but we don't dwell on it, and when we leave the room, we leave it behind.
Yeah. So you give them a form to do it in, and most of the time that validates it and gives them a chance to just for a moment air that out, and then they're ready to move on.
Exactly. People like to be heard.
They like to be heard, and absolutely.
Absolutely. Well, we are going to open it up for questions now and see if what's on your minds. So what questions do you have?
Star 7.
Oh, yep, no. Star 7, so you can ask a question. Do we have a prize for the first question? Hello.
Hey, this is Chris Owens.
Hi,
how are y'all?
Good.
Hey, I'd love to hear Lynn talk a little bit about the change cycle, because that was really when I went through Emerging Leaders. My best day, and every day was good, but that was my best day, and I'd love to hear the change cycle one more time just to refresh me. If you can do it in 5 or 6 minutes, which probably isn't possible, just a real short overview if possible.
No, I can do it.
2 minutes, 3 minutes.
All right, thanks,
okay,
Gary. Yes, the brain has a process for managing change, and there is a cycle to it, and it's not linear. It is a cycle. We go in and out of it all the time. The first stage we tend to bump up in that brain process is simply a loss. What is this change, and something's different is going to happen, and I feel like I'm going to lose something here. That brain understands that, and it's trying to get right. And so once we understand, get some sense of safety in that first stage called loss, we can move to the next stage. That brain wants to understand the change, and we have to help it. The stages help us to put some clarity and naming and a known thing to that. So that second stage is called, you know, doubt. I go from loss of what is this, I'm scared to death, to now I'm angry. I don't like this. Why are we having to do this? So what the brain is really saying in doubt is, I'm not going to let you change, Lynn, until you go get me some more data. I need data. I need to understand this. I really do want to understand it. But meantime, I'm not going to let myself just be opened up. I'm going to get defensive here. So doubt is another piece in that brain. But it's a growth. When we get people to doubt and they start asking questions and they get a little angry, I go, yippee-yay, we're growing in the process. It's not always a nice place to be if we're leading that, but it is a healthy place. So doubt, the way we answer doubt and respond to doubt in the change process is to give them more information. Like we said earlier, say it again, repeat it, give them data, let them ask the questions. That's how they're going to learn what they need to get. Discomfort, once we get past doubt, we get into another stage where I'm just tired of all this. You know, I just really don't even feel like I can come in today. I just don't even want to talk about Marriott today. I just can't think about all this process stuff. I just need a day off. So we start to get tired and wear down. That's called discomfort. Our anxiety goes up. Our productivity continues to go down. What we need to do to help manage that place in the process is called encouragement. Pats on the back. I see, Lynn, that you made an effort today. I saw that. And we notice small things, the evidence that Joe talked about earlier. We start to show evidence that things are changing and are moving. But keep me in the water. Don't let me give up and go backwards. Keep those positive thoughts coming in. And then we eventually get onto the other side of the coin that is more the opportunity side, and we get into this place where our brain is more comfortable now because it's getting the data, we're getting the high encouragement, we're allowed to validate the emotions, and that brings discovery. That's a place of, gee, I'm actually kind of looking forward to this. I don't know why. I don't really have all the pieces to the puzzle yet, but it just feels different, and we're starting to be more comfortable with this place. And so the way that we continue in the change process there is to allow people to now offer up, I have something to give this change. This is what Lynn does best, and I'm going to bring that to the process now. So we start to participate more in our talents and resources in that. And when that will lead and smooth the path to greener pastures, which is called understanding. Aha! This is what Joe's been talking about at Tractor Supply Company. I get it. Well, I didn't understand that before, but it makes complete sense to me now. And that's because the data and the information has been in our brain now, and we see it, and we become really quite confident and rational now. The emotional part of us is gone, and I really do see it. And I see what the organization's doing, or I see what this relationship is, and we're going to be at a crossroad of making a choice of whether we stick with it or don't stick with that. And that's a healthy place to make a decision, is when we get confidence and understanding. And then we eventually integrate it into our normal lives, which is the last process in the change cycle, which is I don't even think about it anymore. I'm so unconsciously confident about it, I didn't even know I was writing with the other hand anymore. I just do it, where I couldn't do that before back in stage 1 and 2, and I was kicking and screaming in that process. So your stages are loss, doubt, discomfort, discovery, understanding, integration. The way to manage and lead that is, you know, we need to make it safe. We need to give people more information. We need to make people, give them high encouragement, motivations, some distractions to have some fun, keep them encouraged to stay in the process, give people the opportunity to contribute, and then make healthy decisions to how we support the organization with better understanding, and then we just go do it, and we're all doing it now. And there's another change that's coming our way, so here it comes again. That's why it's a cycle.
Lynn, that was amazing. Thank you.
Thank you.
We have one from our website. What about leading the speed of change? Joe spoke of evolutionary versus revolutionary change. Is there a point where leaders that are distant from the day-to-day need to take a reality check?
Yes.
In
the change, in the change process, you know, the organization wants to survive and needs to go. So, and we try to get everybody on that bus on the early stages and helping them through their emotions. And we want people on that bus, and we encourage that. But they sometimes people they straggle behind, and they can struggle with that. And that's what we really need to do, as Joe talked about earlier, that mentoring, particularly with the person he mentioned about, do a little bit more mentoring with that person. But ultimately, people have a choice. And the bus is moving or is going to go, regardless of whether we get on the bus or not. And sometimes, like, I've had some folks that have really struggled with this, and I've had to have those really candid conversations and said, this is definitely where the organization's going. I want to give you the resources, the tool, and the encouragement to be a part of that. But there comes a point where I can't wait forever. So sometimes those crucial conversations might have to happen about stepping up or considering that this may not be their place anymore. And that's a brutal fact again.
Yes, it is. But it's so important to recognize it and not just sweep it under the carpet.
Yes. I've had a few of those in my lifetime here.
If the question also mentioned leaders who are distant from the actual change, and that presents some real problems by itself. The leaders who are leading the change have to be knee-deep in what's going on and understand what's going on in order to make change happen. And if they're distant from the process, the odds are that it's not going to go as smoothly as it should and could.
Yeah, in my quality days when I had some resistors or really distant folks like you talked about, in some cases it was, they just didn't have the proper information or weren't involved or invited into the conversation. I often said that, you know, the people refer to them as pessimists sometimes. I refer to them as frustrated optimists. They oftentimes just didn't have the resources or tools or plugged in, but once you got them, man, they could be your best driver or salesperson in that process. But, yes, people ultimately have a choice, and ethically, I want to make sure I've given everybody the resources, the tool, the knowledge, and the opportunity to step up to this. I want to look myself in the mirror and know that I've done everything I possibly could. And knowing that, if I still have to have that conversation, then the right thing is to have that conversation with that person.
Even if it's the leader, sometimes I think the leader has to also be open to hearing, we need your help.
Yes, absolutely, absolutely. We got to invite that in and help them to know what we need from them as well.
Right.
Okay, questions. There are 90 of you on the call, so we should get 84 questions because we got 6 so far. *7 for the questions. *7 for the questions. If you ask a question, we can keep talking. If not, you have to go back to work.
I've got a question.
Great.
This is Kevin Lester. And I know the magnitude of a change will dictate the answer to this, but is there any frame of reference that you might give to this? And that is, we'll call it a significant change. What is that life cycle in time? The change process from loss to integration on what you'd call significant change. Typically, you might say, you know, really it's going to take a year, or I know it depends, but what's the frame of reference you might give?
Typically, in my quality days of improvement, you have a significant change going on in an organization, which we do have here at Gaylord with the Marriott transition. We know we are going to be in this transition for a good 12 to 16 months to really know that we have integrated into Marriott and we understand their processes and so forth. So it could be, you know, 16 to 18 months when you have a significant organizational change. If you're dealing with a personal change, such as a loss of a loved one or a child, that can be significantly longer.
Okay, thanks.
I think different organizations can absorb change more rapidly than others, so a lot of it depends on the culture of the organization. I think I mentioned this earlier, but one of our values at Tractor Supply was change, and we talked about it repeatedly so that when change did come down the road, people were accustomed to hearing those words and were more accepting of it than they would have been in a previous organization I worked for.
Yeah, the more flight hours we have with experiences, the more we get that muscle of flexibility and openness up. It gets easier and easier. So as Joe said, the culture is huge in that process.
Thanks for the question. Next question.
Lynn, we have an online question. What is the most difficult phase of the change cycle? Which stage is the hardest?
I think the hardest stage is three, the discomfort stage, because it really is kind of nicknamed the breakdown or breakthrough, because we're just tired, we're frustrated, and we start to lose energy. And that's, you know, change needs energy, but we begin to lose energy here, and that could kick us into that danger zone and push us right back to stage one. So I tend to want to have a big bear hug around stage three and really have high encouragement, because we're so close to breaking through over to stage four, and it's like a 180-degree turn in that process, from anxiety to anticipation and confused to I have resources. So we're so close. So I tend to want to hug that stage the most. I think the most difficult one sometimes can be stage two, because it's loud, it's angry, it's obnoxious. And that's where camps can get built really quickly into them and us. And so, but two and three are really critical, but three is where I want to put a lot of attention to, because you are so close to breaking through. I don't want you to break down. I want you to break through.
And it's probably the easiest to recognize, don't you think?
Yes, it is, because people are just tired. You're seeing absenteeism go up. You're seeing people are getting short with each other, and they're withdrawing, and they're coming in earlier and staying later, but the productivity is down. So it's easy to see that stage. It gets quieter after stage two. And that's scary, because you don't really know what's going on now.
Absolutely, it is.
Okay, question, star 7.
Hello?
Yes.
Hi, this is Andrea from Grant Associates in Atlanta.
Hi, Andrea.
How are you guys?
Good.
I wanted to know, I have a lot of supply chain customers, manufacturers here in Atlanta, and they could have change, you know, quite often, as is involved, and our company does workforce development, so it affects the employees a lot. Does Scarlett Institute provide consultation to enterprise-sized customers like that, and provide kind of like a template or a map to disseminating this information about these changes that go on? And it would start off with like town hall meeting or emails first or one-on-ones, or how do you all address that with your clients?
I think every organization is different and probably has a different best solution, but we would start with talking with leadership and then talking with some of the other folks and to find out where they are, what the culture is in your organization, and then go from there as to what we think the best solution would be.
If you want to give us a call back later on, we'd be happy to chat with you about that individually and try to map out a plan for your organization.
Okay, yeah, I was actually talking about my clients. They have changed quite often, and sometimes I engage with them trying to help disseminate the information to the staff or whatnot. And but those are services that you all do provide.
They are.
We do.
Okay, great, thanks.
I think this will probably be our last question. We have an online question. When building a young organization, and it changes every day, how can I best help myself and others focus on the day-to-day activities, so keep the business going and yet still grow?
That's a tough issue. My experience, I mentioned earlier, when we made that giant acquisition, is we took the change subject and took it off the day-to-day table and did it on Monday nights. But it's always difficult, particularly with a young and growing organization, to deal with those issues. So it's a matter of, from a leadership standpoint, of making sure you put the proper emphasis on the right things and try to organize time devoted to the right things. Lynn?
Yeah, the same thing here, Joe. I mean, we're dealing with Marriott right now. We have certain day and a time in which we address a lot of that future stuff, and that we so we know where that place is. And then on the other day, we're focusing on the day-to-day stuff. So we do have a place and a forum in which to address these things, but then we can turn it off and move over to this part of the business as well. So, and it does require a lot of after hours as well. And in taking to the family, like you said, Joe, we often sent fruit baskets and stuff home to families' homes while we had their spouses at work, too, so that we recognize the efforts that were being placed on everybody's part.
It's a great idea. We have several more questions that have come in online, and we are out of time, so we will respond by email to each of you, and we appreciate your questions.
Lynn, I want to thank you very much for joining us today, and I want to thank all of you 90 folks that are on the call for joining us today. Just a little reminder, our next call is March 14th. That's a Thursday. Mark it in your calendar. Our presentation skills, a second class, will be March 19th. You can get to that online. And for those of you that would like to join or know somebody who would like to join our Emerging Leaders class, that will be beginning April 10th, and the sign-ups for that are open now. So we thank you very much for joining us. We hope you have a wonderful day and look forward to seeing you on March 14th.
Thank you.
Bye-bye.